The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The consumer price index was expected to rise just 3.6% over the past 12 months, but it did not. It rose 4.2%. The CPI measures how much people are paying for goods compared to what they paid last year. So this is all about inflation, right? Because the concern here is about inflation. If I don't know if you paid for anything in the past year, you might be surprised that that number wasn't even higher.
Yes.
The interesting thing here as you look at these numbers is that it actually has the price of energy going down over the past year. And we know that gas prices have just been on the rise, especially in the past couple of weeks. I just filled up my tank and it was almost $60.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, boy, I'm sure you're seeing it. Gas is on the way up. You are seeing food prices rise. We know inflation is creeping upwards. We'll dive into that news from Cheddar News a little bit deeper. Cheddar News went on to talk about the rise in inflation, and Dr. Jay Richards is going to be stopping by. I always enjoy his analysis and his insight, and you can, of course, join me as well. But I want you to hear this before we talk to Dr. Richards. Listen to this.
But this is the largest 12-month increase since a 4.9% increase for the period ending September 2008. So that takes us back to some of the financial recession era metrics that we were watching on the economy. The Bureau of Labor Statistics putting that within the first paragraph in their release as well. The index for all items without food and energy use, that rose 0.9% in April, its largest monthly increase since April of 1982. And nearly all major component indexes increased in April as well. So these are significant numbers because it was the largest one-month increase since the series began in 1953 and accounted for over a third of the seasonally adjusted of all items for used cars and trucks, rising 10% in April. So that a massive rise.
All right, so let's talk about it. Yeah, we've seen what the last 20 years or so, the rate of inflation has been pretty steady, right? It's been averaging around 2% a year since 2000, and that's not a really huge burden to bear. In fact, there were times in the past, I think, two decades when when economists were concerned about deflation happening, right? But that's not happening now. You know, the government reported today that inflation rose at an annual rate of 4.2% last month. That's way more than analysts have been expecting. And look, you're seeing it, I know, in food and in gas. Those are things that, you know, immediately impact. You're probably seeing a lot of other items as well. I shared the Wall Street Journal article I saw last week or maybe 2 weeks ago now, that the cost of lumber, you know, if people trying to build new homes or just get lumber for fixes. An OSB board would normally cost you about $10 a board. It's now $60, $50 to $60. There's been a 250 to 260% increase in lumber in the country. Well, it has a lot to do with people not working the lumber mills. They don't want to work, or maybe they're being paid more by the government. It also deals with, you know, input from Canada. You know, our border has been shut down there because of the pandemic. There's a lot of factors. I hope that number comes back down. But you can see, you know, it's a lot of other items as well. MarketWatch.com, they reported that used car prices have surpassed $25,000 for the first time. Have you tried to buy a used car? My son is broke as a joke, all right? You know, his car was on its last leg and it died, right? And a car I was driving had a bunch of miles on it. You know, and I'm thinking, I don't want to buy a new car, right? But I ended up selling my car, and I'm looking for a car, right? I sold it to him for a couple hundred bucks just so he'd have a car. The reality is the cost of used cars are through the roof. The average cost, used car prices have surpassed $25,000 for the first time. That's a big number. And that's the average price of a used car. Gas prices are up to $3 a gallon for the first time in more than 6 years. So this is something that some finance guys have been warning about for a long time, including Peter Grandage, one of the regular contributors on my show. The reason for it, Grandage said, it's easy money. The Fed makes it available for, you know, a number of years, and because of the money that the government's giving away. And of course, MarketWatch USA, they had another headline there that said, you know, the U.S. budget deficit widened to a record $1.9 trillion for 7 months. And that report, you know, this comes just a few days after the government's report on jobs, which showed only 200,000 jobs were gained in the last month. They were expecting a quarter of a million, three quarters of a million, 750,000 to a million. So we saw a fraction of that. But there are, I think, 1.8 million job openings around the country right now. And earlier in the week, we talked about that. Why are there so many jobs and yet unemployment numbers are high? So there are openings employers just can't fill because of the competition from the government paying that extra money. But let's talk about it. I'm joined today by Dr. Jay Richards. He's an assistant research professor at the Bush School of Business and Economics at Catholic University of America. You can check him out. He's executive director at thestream.org. And I bookmark this, and I frequent the stream. I think you should, too. He's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. But executive director there at stream.org. A lot of great stuff. He's authored a number of books, and we've talked about everything from fasting to economics. And he's here today to once again share his knowledge. Doctor, thank you for your time. It's always a delight.
My pleasure, Drew. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Inflation, let's talk about that. Is the inflation being caused by the government just printing too much money? What's the driver behind this? I know we're coming out of a pandemic. Yeah. You know, we had the Trump administration prior to that. Things were going well. I mean, is it fair to point a finger at this administration? Is it their policy? I mean, why are we seeing inflation?
Yeah, I think it's actually, you know, let me admit my priors here. I'm disagreeing with almost every one of President Biden's economic policies. Mm-hmm. I disagreed with him closing the XL pipeline. I think it's a huge mistake to continue the unemployment assistance. It's keeping people from getting jobs. I just checked, we have spent $3 trillion, we've added $3 trillion to the deficit just in the last 12 months. Of course, a bunch of that was during President Trump's administration. But my point is that all these things, I think, would point to greater inflation. And as a general point, if the government spends a lot of money, creates a lot of fake money, and people aren't producing goods because they're not working, that's going to create inflation. So that's the one side. On the other hand, looking at these numbers, I really think that we need a few more months before we say inflation is getting out of hand. And the reason is this. Remember, you said it correctly. You said, so in April, the inflation increased at an annual rate of 4.2%. The New York Times actually said it went up 4.2%. No, that's about 0.8% for the month of April. It's just that the Fed looks at, okay, what is the annualized rate? And the Fed wants it to be, the Fed's target is about a 2% inflation rate. And so there's a reason that, all things being equal, inflation tends to be around 2%, is because the Fed adjusts interest rates in order to try to keep it at that. And so the concern now is, okay, we've got an annualized rate of 4.2%. Is the Fed now going to raise interest rates? And so that's what I think we're seeing in the stock market today, is worry that interest rates are going to go up. Here's the problem, is that we're talking about an annualized rate. And so we're comparing this April to last April. But of course, last April, the whole country had shut down. Nobody was driving. Nobody was flying. And so you have this massive dip, including a massive dip in prices. And so if you compare it to that, of course, the inflation is going to look really, really high. But if you were to sort of extrapolate from, say, last January, when the economy was going well, to now, the actual inflation rate's only a little bit higher than you would expect. And I think a lot of what we're experiencing now, certainly in the last couple of weeks in the pump and grocery prices, is honestly an increase in demand because a lot of people are getting back to normal. So I really think at the moment, even though I'd say my philosophical assumption is that this, you know, the government's doing inflationary things, this 1 month of inflation compared to a year ago is not enough to tell us that, oh, you were getting it runaway inflation.
Yeah, right. It's you mentioned the stock market. The numbers I saw were that the inflation rate spooked the markets, with the Dow closing down, I think, 680 points today. The S&P was and the Nasdaq dropped, more than 2%. That's just a temporary little bump, you think, or what do you see coming?
Yeah, I think, of course, but anything that happens in a particular day, you don't want to say too much about. But of course, traders know that if the Fed gets spooked and raise interest rates, it doesn't really matter if inflation is real or not. If the Fed thinks it's real, and the Fed panics and raises interest rates. That's real. So that's what people trading stocks and equities are worried about. Now, if this continues for several months, so we go April, May, June, July, remember by the middle of the summer, things were kind of getting back to normal last year. If we continue at an annualized rate over 4%, then I'd be, you know, let's say June, I'd say, okay, yeah, we're dealing with some systemic inflation here. And then I think what I would have otherwise expected is actually happening. I just want to be intellectually honest and say, well, okay, I expect there to be inflation, but when I compare it to the fact that our baseline is last April when everything had completely shut down, you got a discount for that. It wasn't a normal month last April. I mean, everything, that's why gasoline prices just plummeted last year. It wasn't because we found new oil wells, it's because nobody was filling up.
Oh, wow. Hey, my guest today, Dr. Jerry Richards, if you want to join us, 888-914-9149. We're talking about inflation, the market, the economy, what's happening here. And we'll take a few of your calls at 888-914-9149. But first, I want to get back to that 4.2% rise in inflation. That's pretty high. It's something that we haven't seen, I think I saw since 2008. So that's a significant period of time. But I always try to look at the big picture and I say, does this suddenly become a vicious cycle? And if it does, how does it stop? How do we get out of this? How do we pump the brakes on it?
Yeah, well, this is what the Fed tries to do, but the Fed, of course, has limited control. The Fed can alter artificially, effectively, the money supply and especially interest rates. So basically the price on money, so make it more expensive to borrow, and then that can kind of slow things down. On the other hand, if the federal government decides, not the Federal Reserve now, but the federal government, the Treasury, just decides to borrow a lot of money and to send it in terms of checks or to increase people's unemployment payments or something like that, then you've got money basically being artificially infused into the economy and given to people that aren't actually producing. Because, of course, if we're producing, then new money will buy new goods. But if you get more money chasing around the same number of goods, then the price of every individual good is going to go up. That may be what's happening, for instance, with the cost of used cars, for instance. The supply of used cars isn't really going up, but the amount of money people have because they're getting $1,600 checks or something is causing the prices to go up. We can't continue that forever. We can't just continue to effectively borrow money from the future and then just sort of stick it into the economy, but still have about 9 million people not in the workforce. That's 9 million people that were in the workforce about this time last year, so before the lockdowns. There are 9 million people that are still not back in the workforce. So in other words, they're either looking for jobs and can't find it, or they're not even trying to look for jobs. That's the thing that I look at. And so the fact that we could have inflation even with that, right? So people that aren't in the workforce aren't necessarily spending a lot of money. That's really worrisome because we basically had a year in which money has continued to be spent because the federal government has borrowed it.
Yep.
But the country as a whole has not been nearly as productive as it normally is. So we're not putting goods out there in the world to be bought. And so all those set up the conditions for inflation. And so that's why I sort of expect it if we continue this. It's just that at the moment, I wouldn't say, okay, this is a disaster, simply because we did have a huge plunge a year ago.
All right, let's grab a call or two for you. The number 888-914-9149. Mike is listening in Chicago. Mike, hi, you're on the air with Dr. Jay Richards.
Hey, Drew, great show as usual. Thanks. I have a question. If you've got a president out there telling the world that he's shutting down oil exploration, he's shutting down pipelines, isn't that telling people in the world, specifically those in the Middle East, that, hey, you know what, we're back in the driver's seat. The United States used to be energy independent. Now we're back in the driver's seat. Let's tighten up the market a little bit, which is going to raise the price.
Yes, the answer, that's a really good question, and it's a simple answer, which is yes. And so if you're wondering, okay, why are gas prices so high? Well, of course, we had the Colonial Pipeline getting shut down this week as an instant spike, but prices have been going up since January. I mean, in fact, you can sort of track them from January the 20th. One of the first things that President Biden did is say, well, we're going to reduce exploration. We're cutting off the Keystone XL pipeline. And if you look, the OPEC, that's the Middle Eastern oil cartels, are now very disciplined in controlling the supply of gasoline, precisely so that the supply of oil, rather, precisely so that they can keep prices artificially high. The United States was becoming a real contender and a competitor there for a while. And so it's just exactly the opposite of what you would want to do. Now, of course, President Biden couldn't have anticipated this hacker syndicate shutting down this pipeline, but it does illustrate the problem. You know what? 45% of the oil and gasoline on the eastern seaboard is supplied by this single pipeline that comes from Houston. It's insane that we would be cutting off a pipeline coming from a completely different place, from Canada, which that oil is going to have to be, gas is going to have to be moved around, but it has to be moved around on the roads. And so we're doing exactly the opposite of what we would want to do if we wanted to keep oil prices down and prevent volatility in the cost of gasoline. But President Biden is doing exactly what you would want to do if you're wanting to appease the radical environmental left, which is exactly what he's doing.
Hey, Mike, thanks. Great call. Great question.
You got it, Drew.
Appreciate it. Let me go to Lloyd in Eagle River, Wisconsin. Eagle. Lloyd, good afternoon.
Thanks for taking my call, Drew.
You got it.
You don't have to be an economist to see what's happening. If you sit back, I've been watching for the last 2-3 months, and you watch your commodity prices in agriculture. Mm-hmm. You could see which way the corn was going. It used to be $2.50, $3. Now you're hitting $7, $7.50. You're going to hit $8 a bushel for corn. You can see what's happened with the soybeans, with the wheat. The whole thing, you just take a look at it, and you can see what's happening. And this is not going to affect you right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to affect you in the fall of the year and beyond. Mm-hmm. Because now what's going to happen, it's going to get into your beef. It's going to get into your chickens. It's going to get into your pork. And anybody with a brain can see what's going to happen. Your inflation is going to be kicking in a lot more.
Wow.
And now China's coming in and buying our new crop of corn. So stuff that's being planted right now, China's starting to load up on it. So they know there's going to be a shortage of corn. And also, they're coming in and they're buying our ethanol. And they're buying a lot of our ethanol up right now, too, because of the gasoline prices. But you don't have to be an economist. All you got to do is sit back and watch your stock markets and watch your future markets on your grain.
Lloyd, thank you. Thanks for the perspective. Doctor, you want to sound off on that? It sounds
Exactly. He's talking, of course, he's talking about commodities. So in particular, agricultural commodities, like he mentioned corn and soy. And then he said mentioned right there at the end, what you're dealing with is futures. And so if you're looking at, the price of corn right now, what you're looking at is people who buy commodities, they are buying, basically placing bets on what the future price of these things is going to be. And they're betting big that prices are going to go up. So even if something that either corn directly or beef that's fed by corn, even if you don't feel that now, what he's saying is that inflationary pressure on food prices, basic commodities, we're going to feel that in a few months. I'm inclined to agree. And in fact, it looks like food prices and gas prices are the kind of the main driver of the increase in inflation in April.
Yeah.
And I would discount some of the gas prices just because the price dropped so much a year ago. Right. But people were still eating a year ago. So it's not like we quit eating food suddenly last April. And so I'm inclined to think that that's a real signal of inflation, and it's especially inflation to come.
Yeah, Doctor, there's also tight supplies. For instance, I was reading an article, I think it was last week, that there's a chip shortage that's making it hard actually for car manufacturers to make new cars. So why are supplies so tight? Was it the shutdown during the pandemic that we're seeing the residuals from this, or what's going on with supplies?
Yeah, I think if I had to guess, it has to be that. I mean, if you can remember a year ago, just how many shutdowns there were. Initially, there was an oversupply. So I can remember about this time last year, this depressing story that Minnesota pig farmers are killing 10,000 pigs a day.
I remember that.
Because there's no place for them to go. It wasn't because everybody quit eating. It was because the supply chain for restaurants completely fell apart. People just started buying groceries, buying stuff, on Amazon, having it delivered, and not going to restaurants. And so it really screwed up our food supply. And so I think what happened is that supply, essentially that supply chain, kind of cut back its action. And then if you're someplace like Maryland or Washington, D.C., you honestly don't know from week to week whether you're going to get to open your restaurant or whether you're going to have to pare back. And so there's so much volatility in that market that I don't think the supply chains have really gotten back where they are. And so when you're looking at you know, the prices of commodities, you're also looking at the price to get to that thing from where it is to where it needs to be. So you're not looking at the price of a pig. It's not just the price of that pig for existing. It's how much it costs to get that pig from Minnesota to your table in Washington, D.C.
So true. All right. Nathan's listening in Austin. He wants to join the conversation. Nathan, hi. You're on the air with Dr. Richards.
Hi, Drew. Hi, Dr. Richards. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question. I know over the years, I think this consumer price index or whatever the measure we use to measure inflation, they've taken things out of that to measure what inflation is. And so I guess my question is, what were the things that were taken out? What could we look at now if we wanted to get a gauge of what inflation how we used to measure it, what it would be now if we looked at that? And then is it better to look at those older ways of measuring inflation, or is it better to just stick with what we're looking at now that has removed things that we used to consider?
That's a really good question, and let me try to simplify it. And so when we're looking at the Consumer Price Index now, what we're really looking at is the sort of the things that everyone needs. And so whether you're rich or poor, you need food, you need a car, you need, you know, gasoline. And so those are the kind of universals. And so those are the things that actually affect people's bottom line, especially if you're in a lower income bracket. So if you are just right above poverty, right, you still have to drive to work. Gasoline costs the same amount as it does for Bill Gates. And so you might spend a whole lot of your income on gasoline, right? Whereas if you're Bill Gates, you spend almost none of the total amount of your income on gasoline. So that's why we focus on those things. On the other hand, if you were to look at consumer goods, which used to be included, I can't remember the exact ones, but the things that aren't included in this would be things like the cost of data storage or the cost of a laptop computer or a desktop computer or a television, right? Well, in general, high-tech consumer goods continue to get better year on year, and adjusted for inflation actually get less expensive. And so in some ways, it doesn't mean that everything that Americans buy has gotten more expensive. In fact, a lot of stuff has gotten less expensive. That's why almost everybody across the income spectrum has an HD TV in their house, whereas that would have, you know, cost you a fortune even 12 or 13 years ago. But we don't focus on those things primarily because when we're talking about the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, we're just kind of wanting to focus on those things that really affect people's bottom line. So it's really important to remember that, especially when we're talking about inflation, that there is a bunch of stuff in our economy that's actually getting better and less expensive, and it's mostly kind of in the high-tech sector.
Doctor, I want to thank you for your time. My apologies, Clark, and everyone else that's on hold. I can't grab you. I'm up against the clock. Check out Dr. Richards. He's executive editor of thestream.org and, of course, assistant research professor at the Bush School of Business and Economics at Catholic University of America. When we come back, there is some good news out there. Just tune in. You might think, oh, my gosh, what's happening in the culture? You'll love this story. Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Life is winning again in America.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
I always love that quote. Huh? That was Vice President Mike Pence. He addressed a group of faithful pro-lifers at the March for Life a couple years ago, and he said, life is winning. And you know what? He's right. Life is winning. It's winning. You are on the winning side of history if you believe that the life in that womb is a human being that deserves dignity and a right to life and to liberty and to the pursuit of happiness. You know, we got to defend life from the moment of conception through natural death. I'm assuming you know that. Not everybody does. There's great confusion in the culture. I shared a story the other day. I think the head of the Department of Health and Human Services, Becerra, they want to lift all these restrictions on, you know, the abortion pill. I mean, you hear all these horrible stories and what's happening with the Biden administration and how pro-death they actually are. We talked about the Mexico City policy. We talked about a lot of other pieces of legislation and executive orders that threaten life in this country. And you would think, man, we are losing. What are you talking about, Drew? What are you talking about? How's life winning, right? Well, let me just tell you, and I've been monitoring a lot of these stories. I'm going to put a news story up from Dr. Michael New. It was an article that I saw. We'll put it on our Twitter page, and I hope you'll follow us there. It's at Drew Mariani Show, okay? At Drew Mariani Show. And please follow us there, like us on Facebook. Do the same thing for me personally, at Drew Mariani. I'd love to stay in touch with you there as well. A lot of states right now, they are wrapping up their annual and biannual legislative sessions. And there's actually a lot of good news, on the pro-life front from a lot of those states. And this is underreported. And that's why I thought, you know what, let me just put it on your radar so that you know that things are changing. Your prayers are working. We are on the winning side of life, as the vice president said. According to the Guttmacher Institute, the research arm of Planned Parenthood, there are 61 pro-life laws that were passed in various states around the country this year. 61 pro-life laws passed. That's a real victory. Some of those laws include outlawing abortion after a baby's heartbeat can be detected. Now, doesn't that just make sense? I mean, it's a common sense law, right? Fantastic. Those laws, of course, they're going to be challenged. They're not done. They're going to be challenged in court. They're more likely going to end up before the Supreme Court, which actually could be good news. It could be used as an opportunity to overturn Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade's going to fall. It's a matter of time. It's bad law, right? It's going to be history. Other laws that were passed include the law that aborting children who have genetic defects like Down syndrome and protecting the lives of preborn children after 20 weeks of gestation. So there's some real advancements here. In addition to that, you know, while there were and still are in some places really pro-abortion bills that are put forward, I don't want to say they're not because there are, those have not been able to advance. For instance, here's a great story, New Jersey, right? The Garden State. New Jersey's Reproductive Freedom Act, it's been stalled, and Illinois' effort to repeal their parental notification law, that hasn't gone anywhere either. And those are pretty blue states. So there's a lot of great news. I saw a story this morning. Louisiana's legislature, they recognized the anniversary of Roe v. Wade as what they're calling a day of tears, and their state legislature just passed a resolution recognizing January 22nd, 2022, the 49th anniversary of legalized abortion throughout the United States, as a day of tears. And I think what a perfect way to describe it. What a perfect way on so many levels, right? Well, here to join me to give us some perspective is Michael New. Dr. New is an associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and a research associate at the Bush School at the Catholic University of America. Follow him on Twitter. You'll be glad you did. His Twitter handle's @Michael_J_New. @Michael_J_New. I do, and I think you'll enjoy following him as well. Doctor, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Besides the fetal heart bill, you know, the heartbeat laws that I talked about, the one protecting children with genetic deformities as well, it's another good one. What other kind of laws have passed? I know you've written about this.
I mean, it's been really good. I mean, as you mentioned, Idaho and Oklahoma both passed bills that would ban abortion after a fetal heartbeat could be detected. Montana went ahead and passed a 20-week abortion ban. That's a positive development. We have Governor Ducey in Arizona. He passed legislation that would prohibit abortion due to a prenatal diagnosis, like Down syndrome. So we're trying to legally protect those with a Down syndrome diagnosis. So it's been very thorough that over 61 pieces of pro-life legislation have been signed. 13 states wow. have passed at least one pro-life law. And there have been 8 gestational age limits. So lots of states doing very good work protecting preborn children.
That's great. It's good news. It really is. You would think the opposite is true, that, oh, with the Biden administration, things are going to be really dark. But we're seeing the fight for life and the victories become more prevalent here. Why have the pro-life, the pro-abortion bill, I should say, in New Jersey and the effort to repeal the one in Illinois, the parental notification law, Illinois in particular, I'm surprised that hasn't gone anywhere. What's behind that? It seems very unusual for some of these deeply blue states not to advance pro-abortion legislation.
Well, part of it is that pro-lifers are fighting back. And to be honest, even in blue states, you know, incremental pro-life laws are popular and poll well. I mean, even many Democrats, you know, think that minor girls notify or receive permission from their parent before obtaining an abortion. So, you know, pro-lifers have done their best in both Illinois and New Jersey, and they've at least had some success stalling these efforts. Again, the effort to repeal the pro-life parental involvement bill in, or the pro-life parental involvement legislation in Illinois has not really gone anywhere. In New Jersey, people who support legal abortion are trying to pass the Reproductive Health Act to legalize abortion throughout all 9 months of pregnancy, and make it possible for non-physicians to do abortion. Again, this is not a piece of legislation that's, you know, all that popular, you know, even among Democrats. So by organizing Republicans, independents, and even some moderate conservative Democrats, pro-lifers can push back and defeat these bills.
Amen to that. I hope we see more of it. I'm curious as to what happens next, though. I mean, how many of these laws are going to end up in the courts? And we're talking about the fetal heartbeat bill. That seems like a natural one that will be challenged. That could make its way to the Supreme Court. What do you see for the future of Roe v. Wade in the country? And how many of these bills that are now being passed by these pro-life legislatures, how many are going to end up in the courts?
Well, I don't like to make predictions, but I think we have really good reason to be optimistic. That I think one of the most important things that President Trump did was appointing some very good constitutionalist judges to both the Supreme Court and the lower courts. President Trump appointed three new Supreme Court justices, Amy Coney Barrett, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh. And again, we don't know what cases the Supreme Court will choose to hear. We cannot predict with certainty how they will rule on a given case. But I certainly think with this new court, bills that offer legal protection to unborn children will receive a much more sympathetic hearing. I think they'll receive a much more favorable hearing. And I think a lot of these laws have a good chance of being upheld.
My guest today, Michael New, Dr. Michael New, if you want to join us, 888-914-9149. We'll take your calls. I only have them for a few minutes today. There's also a positive development in Connecticut in outside of the womb. We're talking about in regards to euthanasia, and this is the other great battle in the country today. I mean, you have life being threatened in the womb. Of course, we see it at the end of life as well. Fill everyone in on what's happening right now in the state of Connecticut.
Right. In Connecticut, as well as several other states, there's efforts to legalize assisted suicide. And you know, unfortunately, Oregon, I think, was the first state to do this back in the 90s. And pro-lifers have, you know, pushed back, I think, pretty effectively. But you do see, sadly, more and more states legalizing assisted suicide. There was an effort to do so in Connecticut, but pro-lifers were able to push back pretty effectively. And that piece of legislation was voted down in committee. So I think we're having some you know, good success pushing back there. I mean, one thing about assisted suicide is that very often disability groups are often willing to join with us and testify. A lot of times the disability groups are able to persuade Democrats and liberals in a way that pro-lifers sometimes cannot. But we have been able to push back. And again, that bill that would have legalized assisted suicide in Connecticut didn't even make it out of committee. Yeah. So good work to pro-lifers in that state.
Yeah, that's awesome. Final thought here, just you know, for those who are listening, what can they learn from these successes? I mean, what can pro-lifers learn right now?
I mean, a couple of things. When it goes on in the states is very important, and we made good progress at the state level during the Clinton years and during the Obama years. When Clinton was in office, I think 11 states passed good informed consent pieces of pro-life legislation. 12 states passed pro-life parental involvement laws. During the Obama administration, over 400 pieces of state-level pro-life legislation were passed. So even with Biden in the White House, we can still do a lot of good things at the state level. Another thing that's important is that pro-lifers have made some good investments in local politics, that Republicans control more state legislatures. And again, there's many good pro-life Democrats doing very good, very important work. But when Republicans control both chambers of the state legislature, it makes it much easier to pass these good pro-life laws. Right now, Republicans control both chambers of the state legislature in 30 states.
Wow.
Republicans control unified control of government in 23 states. That just makes it much, much easier for us to pass these, again, good protective pro-life laws at the state level.
You got it. Well, hey, Doctor, thanks. Thanks for writing. Thanks for bringing this to everyone's attention. And keep up your good work, okay? We will make sure everybody gets connected to the articles up on our Twitter page. And, of course, they can find you at Michael_J_New. Am I get that right?
Yep, you got it.
All right. Hey, have a great day. Thank you for being here.
Thanks a lot.
That's Dr. Michael New. And again, check him out. Of course, he hails also from CUA. It's Catholic University of America. I'll tell you what, I only have a few moments here, but I'd love to hear from you as well. Let me do this. I know many of you pray outside of abortion clinics. You know, you might be doing the 40 days for life. You might be working in crisis pregnancy centers. I'd love to hear from you. What are you seeing right now? What's your sense? Do you have your finger on the pulse of what's happening in the culture? Are things changing? Are attitudes changing? What are you seeing in terms of the pendulum, where it is swinging? Is it swinging towards life in this country? Well, I'm seeing this on a legislative level. Maybe you are a legislator. I'd love to hear from you, too. Let me open the phones. Give me your insights. Let me know what you're experiencing, what you're seeing, what your own victories have been, maybe even how you've changed. 888-914-9149. You can call right now. I'll take your call when I return. 888-914-9149.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Catch up on something you missed. It's all online on the Relevant Radio archives. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Well, about a few minutes left just to hang out with you. I'll take your calls, and feel free to dial in 888-914-9149. Kale Clark is coming up in a minute or two. He's going to be talking a little bit about Coldplay and a saint that you need to know. Always an interesting mix there, so hang out with him. Right now, let me take a few of your calls. Heather is listening in Austin. Heather, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Hey. I wanted to call and share some good news that we have noticed from the Central Texas Coalition for Life, just praying outside of our three abortion facilities in Austin, but also kind of a trend we're seeing across the state of Texas, and that is the decreased availability of abortionists.
Wow.
And we've noticed that, for instance, at one of our facilities, they have been closed every single Saturday since August last year, which is unheard of for most abortion facilities.
Wow.
Including ours. And we've also noticed that between three other facilities across the state, from Dallas, Fort Worth, to Waco, to Austin, that they have all had a hard time getting an abortionist. There's one facility that hasn't even had abortions or any services in about 3 months. There's another one that, in fact, two of them for a while, flying abortionists in from out of state.
Wow.
Because they can't get any in state, which we're
That's
not
sinister.
Really sure, you know, what's going on. But yeah, those are just some things that we're noticing. And
That's
I
great.
Think the Holy Spirit is working. So we're praying that the abortions continue to decrease and the abortionist availability continues to decrease.
I don't think Roe v. Wade will stand long. I think you and I will see a much brighter day where life is respected in the womb. You pray on the sidewalks, right, there in Texas, and God bless you. What have you seen? What have some of your encounters been? I mean, a lot of these women really are just very confused. They don't feel like they have any other options. Is that true?
Yeah, so the couple of the most common responses we get if we do have a woman that stops and talks with us is, I didn't know there were other resources in the community. Of course, we partner with so many of our wonderful pregnancy centers and pro-life doctors here, and that's what we want to share with them. You don't have to do this. There are places that will support you and your family and your baby. So they usually say they were unaware. Another thing that is hard to, it makes it really challenging for our trained sidewalk advocates is that there's just this seemingly increased sense of apathy that they, it's not about not recognizing that it's a baby. It's not about not having the resources available, even if it's free or reduced cost, but it's family issues. And if they don't have the support of the boyfriend or the girl's parents, they don't see past that. They see no other way of doing this. And so they're thinking of the here and now, and they just think this is the quick fix to the problem, not realizing how many other problems this causes later on.
Hey, well, Heather, thank you. Thanks for the call. Thanks for what you're doing. All right. God bless you.
Absolutely. God
Keep
bless you.
Keep up your good work.
Thank you.
Ann is listening in Minnesota. Ann, good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
I
had to call in because I just got off of my shift from crisis pregnancy.
God bless you.
And I was listening a little bit, and thank you. Well, it's challenging, but it's something that we have all been, some of us here have been called to do. And my sentiments echo with the previous caller. I didn't catch her name, but I was listening in and hearing that. What I can say is we in Minnesota are seeing such a huge increase in that abortion pill. I can say since COVID, when you live in a state that will abort up to 24 weeks, that is definitely a crisis. On top of the pandemic, we have read for a while, for several months, seeing women anywhere from 12, 14, 16, 18 weeks coming in and then deciding to abort. And we have the greatest ultrasound. We have the most awesome nurses. We give information on all of these pregnancy options for them. And I would say the biggest crisis is, too, when you're dealing with moms who are post-abort and don't have those resources or even know what to expect. If they're going to choose an abortion, they need to know what those risk factors are. And I think that's a huge disservice when they don't even know what they're doing. And it's a disservice to women if they're going to choose this, this option of abortion, they really need to fully be aware, where can I go to get help afterwards? Because I'll tell you what, Planned Parenthood isn't going, they're going to give a slanted version of what that looks like. So we're seeing an increase in that. And we see so much of the fathers who just will sit back and say, well, do what you want. You know, it's your body. That's just a huge reflection of our culture, how it has gone so far down. It's so pathetic, and it's sad for these women, because even if they were thinking of choosing abortion, if the male just sits back and says, do whatever you want, that's what they're just going to say, well, he's not going to be there anyway.
Fathers don't know how to support.
And I think really the lack of spirituality, the culture has, there's an extreme attack on Christianity to the point where we see women say, well, you know what, I think I'll just I meditate on things or I'll do yoga. I mean, that's their spirituality. But the true Christian faith of, you know, Jesus saves, Christ is here for you. We have to be very careful how we approach that.
Yeah, my heart goes out to any woman who's made that mistake. I think you bring up a really important point. I knew a woman who was in a relationship with a guy, and she got pregnant. And she, I think, really wanted to have the child, but the guy's reaction was so cold towards it that she went and had an abortion. If he would have been the man he should have been and you know, had a positive reaction, hey, we'll get through this or that, you know, whatever, however he wanted to handle it, rather than letting her feel that she was going to be all alone, that child would be alive today, and she never would have made that mistake. And you know, I don't blame her. I blame the man. You know, he abdicated really his opportunity, and it's a wake-up call for men. Women often, you know, they're in the crosshairs of this. They take the blame for it, but I think you're so right. Men play such an integral role in this, and there's a lot of men, though. I've got a friend who's his girlfriend had an abortion, and he begged her not to, but, you know, so women do, you know, they also have their body is their claim. And men lose their rights in protecting their child, too. So it's a tough thing. But you made an interesting comment I'm curious about, the abortion pill. Do you think that, because it's so freely available, is resulting in the decrease in abortions that we're seeing in the Planned Parenthood clinics?
Well, surgical, that's still a moneymaker. Because if there's a failed abortion pill, you know, if they take the medical and that pill fails, they're still going back in for surgical. The concern is, you know, to a lot of women naively think that this is an easy way out. Who wants to have surgery, right? And if you watch their videos, they make it look so simple, like it's painless. It's not. I'm post-abort myself twice, once at the hands of Planned Parenthood and a second one in a hospital setting through my OBGYN. Doctors, OBGYNs, are passing this out in some of their clinics. It's not just an abortion clinic that is giving this out. There, you know, there's a problem, too, with the lifting of the regulations. If women don't have an ultrasound, they're not going to know how far along they are. And
That's
if
true.
They did take that pill and
That's
it
true.
Failed and they go in for a surgical,
yeah.
are they getting tested for an STD? Because that just increases their chances wow. of an infection.
Wow.
And we've got a major crisis on our hands with this. And I will add to real quick, Drew,
yeah, sure.
While I'm thinking of it, it is, and this is, I think, the common misperception, is that it is the young high school girl or the girl in college in her early 20s.
Right.
It is not. We are seeing older
yeah.
women come in. We are seeing, I would say, if they're over statistically age 35, abortion is contraception.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those women statistically have had at least 3 or 4 abortions or more over that period of time. So there's a
yeah.
lot of work and a lot of healing to be done, Drew.
That's so true. You know, the Food and Drug Administration, under the leadership of the HHS Secretary Xavier Becerra, they're looking at lifting all restrictions on the abortion pill. So we still have a fight in front of us, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And Ann, before I let you go, you said you're post-abortive if you had two abortions. Where did you find the healing?
Yeah.
Was it Project Rachel? Was it Rachel's Vineyard? I know that there's resources out there, and I want any woman who's made the mistake, you know, to know that there is healing. And I often say this because I believe it. God's mercy is so great, and he wants to heal, and there is mercy for you. And that's the beauty of the sacrament of reconciliation, too, if you're Catholic. Get there. But where
Absolutely.
Did you find your healing?
It wasn't, and this is a misnomer, too. Some
yeah.
people think you just show up to church or an organization for healing, and you're saved, and you're through it all.
Amen.
It is layers. You are having to get through layers, and they are layers that can unfold like an onion over time, right?
Yep.
So for me personally, I had gone through individual counseling, but there's a fair warning with counseling, especially when you go secular, and that's where I was because I was away from the church for about 20 years. Not all therapists will discuss abortion. They won't even ask you really on an intake when really those abortions could actually be the base problem of what's going on.
You're not kidding.
So I went through secular, and then I did go through Project Rachel a number of years later, but I already had a publicized testimony. I kind of did it backwards, if you will. But I would say some other great sources.
Yeah.
We all do. We
yeah.
know where,
no
where we're called to. And when we're ready, when God calls us and when we're ready, I would say, you know,
yeah.
Project Rachel through the Catholic Church, there's Rachel's Vineyard
yeah.
is wonderful. There is one organization that's called Support After Abortion, and we found out and discovered that a lot of women, it's online, it's called Support After Abortion, and a lot of women, and, you know, just with technology these days, women want to view this in the privacy of their home. Am
yeah.
I having these symptoms? What are they indicative? And then where can I go for those sources to get help if they're ready for counseling or ready for a group? Because group therapy can be intimidating.
Oh, sure.
Especially if you're coming out in this. And it's incremental. And I just pray for these women. And you know what? There's a lot of Catholics out there that
yeah.
are in support of healing. But I've come across some that,
Amen.
You know, you're damned forever. Lack of, sorry about that.
Yeah,
but
no.
I mean, just
I gotcha.
That. You know, you are damned for hell,
well,
and you will never be forgiven. And we have to remember, you know what, at the end of the day, I know where I've been. I know
amen.
When I went back to the confessional. And I just pray for these women and pray
well,
for their families.
God bless you. Look how God used you today, Ann. You called in to respond, and I know a lot of women needed to hear your message. Keep up your good work, okay? I'm grateful for it.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank
God bless
you, Drew.
You.
Thank you, Relevant Radio. God bless.
Got it. And if, you know, I know two people who would love to adopt a child. You know, they love a child. And if there's a woman who wants to, who's thinking about aborting her child, choose life. There's going to be help and resources for you. But if not, let me know. I know two beautiful families who would love, love, love to raise that child. Diane is listening in Missouri. Diane, thanks for joining me.
Yes, thank you. So I praise and thank the Lord. I have a child whom I was pressured from the dad, my own parent, and not knowing what Planned Parenthood was at the time, I actually walked in to that center to see if I was positive because I had been raped, and I was positive. And she pressured me, you know, lightly, but consistently that if I didn't want the baby, it would be quick. They could help me, and they could, and it would be quick. And the second time she brought it up, I said, I'm keeping my baby, and I walked out of there. And again, I went through a couple other hurdles of family members and the dad himself that told me as well several times, if you don't want the baby, you can abort it. And I the second time I told him, I'm keeping my baby. And my baby now is 28.
Well, how beautiful.
And I praise and thank the Lord. He's a very good young man, and I think he may have a calling to the priesthood, so I ask all of you please pray for him.
Well, what a beautiful testimony. Diane, thank you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for sharing that. And my heart goes out to anyone woman who's made the mistake, as I said. Let's pray for that vocation. Look at how God's going to use her son. I think about that all the time. And thank you for tuning in. Thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. It's always a delight just to talk with you, take a look at the most important issues of the day. And if you missed any part of our conversation today, I want to remind you, just go to my archives, my podcasts. You got all the shows there. Jake will have this show up in about an hour, but you'll find some great conversation. Tomorrow as well, we're going to be back. It's the 40th anniversary of a very momentous event tomorrow. I'm going to share some insight onto that. I won't tell you what it is. Tune into the program. I'll get you plugged in. Cale Clark's coming up right now. I'm going to pray for you tonight when I spend time with the Lord. Do me a favor. Say a prayer for me, too. Until we talk again. God bless you.